Okay, so there will be three parts to the talk. The first part, I will derive a limiting Langevin dynamic for spherical spin glasses, starting from deterministic certain distribution of initial condition. The second part will be how to use a disorder-dependent initial condition. And the third part will be the motivation relating it coming back to some recent work on low temperature Gibbs measure. This is a near pure case where we are at the one RSB in the spherical case related to, but complementary to the talk of Tuka from Offinger from yesterday. So first, again, as Leticia explained in the morning, and also the same Langevin dynamic appeared in Lenka's talk and in Federico talk. So we have Langevin particles. It's a vector in Rn in my case, xti from I equal 1 to n. And it's running a diffusion. The diffusion is fed with an n-dimensional Brownian motion dbt. That means in every coordinate you have an independent Brownian motion. And you have a drift which is composed of two pieces. The first part is a gradient of a potential which is multiplied by beta. This makes it essentially a potential force which is related to a Gibbs measure. And then there is an extra term which is just linear in x, which correspond to some kind of a localizing force that makes you become spherical. It's a soft spherical version. And all the norms which will appear here will be Euclidean norms based on inner product. This particular Langevin dynamic is invariant for the Gibbs measure, for the soft version of spherical Gibbs measure. This I call GN. It depends on the disorder J. The disorder J is part of my Hamiltonian. I did not yet describe the Hamiltonian. This measure specifically is not on the sphere yet. It's on the plane because I did not put a delta initial condition. I did not want to do Brownian motion on the sphere. But you just get here essentially the potential whose gradient is exactly what multiplies the drift. And because of the business with Brownian motion having a halves, actually it has its corresponding to temperature 2 beta. So all the equations will deviate from physics equation by a factor 2.
So FL is just confining?
Yeah, it's just global confining function. And here is my global confining function. It composed of two pieces. The first piece, r to the 2m, is simply going to make sure that the integral will be finite. It's a confinement at infinity because my Hamiltonian can grow maybe like the norm to some power, so I need to confine stronger. And the important part is the first part, the quadratic part, which is multiplied by a constant L. If you will send L to infinity, this quadratic part will act like a delta function and will make the norm equal to 1 because the argument of f which I put there is a square norm of x divided by n. So this I'm moving myself to the sphere in dimension n with a radius square root of n, which is corresponding to, is comparable to the hypercube. And what will be the Hamiltonian? The Hamiltonian is our usual Hamiltonian for spherical, mixed spherical spin glasses. So it's a Gaussian field with a zero mean centered and whose covariance is given by the inner product between, is a function of the inner product between the two points x and y, and the polynomial nu here correspond to the mixture of the p spins. So you have here up to m spins. In principle, you can take up to infinity spins, but then I will need to put here an even stronger force in order to prevent my integral to blow out, or alternatively to roll the sleeves and do all the calculation on the sphere, which I did not want to do. So this is exactly so pure spins will be one coefficient, and mixture will be like that. And notice what is very important, I start at 2, but not at 1. So in particular, the derivative of nu at 0 will be 0. And this will appear here and there, and is very important not to have magnetic field.
It's very important that the behavior is completely different.
It's very important because the formulas I will write will not be correct. So I don't know if it's very important. But the other thing, if you have magnetic field, you need to deal with the mean as well.
Right.
which I don't need to deal here because always everything is symmetric. There is absolutely no reason that I will have any mean around here. Right? Okay. So again, this is my Langevin dynamic, and now I want to look at the initial condition, right? So I'm doing something a bit strange. I'm going to number one. Here is my choice of initial condition. So because remember, this is out of equilibrium, so the result will depend on how I start. This was also present in Frederico's talk. So in this particular case, what I have, I first define a point, sigma. Think of sigma as your north pole, but it's not exactly your north pole. It's a little bit attenuated. If Q star is one, it's a north pole. Otherwise, it's a north pole, but going a little bit inside the ball. And then there is also another factor Q, which tells me how concentrate I am. If Q is equal to Q star, I'm going to be really concentrate on one point. If Q is zero, then I let myself be quite far. And what I do, I put a uniform, the initial condition is a uniform measure on the subsphere. I have a sphere, then I have the north pole, go Q star, go like that, you get a circle, that's the uniform measure on this is where you are, okay? What is important to note is that if you put here Q equal to zero, then you are really putting yourself on the whole sphere orthogonal to sigma, but the unit sphere orthogonal to sigma is almost the unit sphere because n is very large. So just remember, Q equals zero is essentially the same as uniform on the sphere. This will come later. Q not equal to zero is restricting it in a certain way. Second thing, I also want, instead of working with the original disorder, I want to work with a conditional disorder, and my conditional disorder is actually going to be a large deviation event. It's something that usually does not happen. What am I going to condition? My particular point sigma where I am centering should have extremely low Hamiltonian. Think of E star as a positive number. Typically the Hamiltonian is only square root of n. I make it minus n E star, it's going to be very big. And I also want to constrain the gradient of the Hamiltonian to be in the direction sigma. That means that I have a big gradient in the radial direction and I have zero gradient in the orthogonal direction. What is important is that this is like a critical point, essentially, in the sense that the spherical gradient will be zero, and it's a low critical point, right? So I'm kind of thinking of what I expect to find in low temperature in the spherical case in the pure p spin or near pure spin, and I force my situation that the sigma deterministic I chose is such a point. Okay, so and I want to yes.
What do you mean that both Q and Q star?
I have two parameters. One tells me the point, this point which has low energy might not be on the critical point where I center myself might be inside the ball. And then the Q is telling me how much of the bend do I make myself kind of sitting just above it, the whole bend, or in some angle around it. Right?
Okay, so the energy is not computed on a point on the
right.
Side,
no.
A point inside.
No. Yeah.
These circular rings are just essentially the support of
right.
This measure.
Yeah.
No,
so
it's to compute the energy which is a function defined on the sphere. In a point inside the
right,
sphere.
Because that's what, that's the way you, that's, so at the end, this will relate to recent work. Two of the three co-authors of this work are here, and the third is Eliran Subag, which actually says that this is a way, we will link it to a way, to a recipe to be near the support of the Gibbs measure at low temperature. However, one should remember one thing already now, is that if you even believe that the Gibbs measure in low temperature is concentrate, which is correct, at least for near pure p spins or pure p spins, around such bands, it definitely is not uniform on those bands. But since I don't know what it is, I put myself to be uniform on this band. Okay, and under these conditions, I want to repeat what Leticia explained to us in the morning, that is, I want to study the limit as n goes to infinity of the covariance, state covariance. In order to do that, I also need to get the response function. This is the integrated response function, meaning it's the integral of the response. If I want to write the response, I will have to write the derivative of Brownian motion. I am concerned, so I will differentiate later. However, in this particular case, I broke the radial symmetry, I broke the symmetry of the sphere by this introduction of the initial condition. So I need, in the same manner as happened in Lenker's case, I will need to keep track of my radial coordinate, which have a special role because I made a big change in the Hamiltonian in this direction, and I also put my initial conditions around it. So instead of two functions, I will now have three functions, and I want to know what happened when n goes to infinity to the limit of these three functions, because the goal is to derive dynamical equation for those, and those will be very different than the equations that Gerard talked about, because this is a tiny, tiny speed, but we are trying to start near the equilibrium somehow, right? So we are still not going far in time, but we put ourselves in good position. That's the idea here, and to see what happens. So I repeat, here are my three functions. So the result that I want to prove, or I can prove, is that there exists some non-random functions which depend on my parameters of the conditioning, which are E star, G star, Q star, and Q, those four which used to define the initial condition and the conditioning, in such a way that the random functions, which I have there, when n goes to infinity, are becoming very close to my deterministic functions, and the norm here, what I call norm T, means you fix the time, because you don't want time to grow with n, otherwise you lose control, and once you fix the time, it's a uniform norm over all times, and you sum over all the functions, the whole thing goes to zero. And it's also in, this is in probability or in some moments or whatever, for, with respect to the three object B, X, zero, and J. So it's a quenched result, in a sense.
If Q were zero, CL and KL would be the equation.
We will get,
QL would be zero.
Slide five. Slide five, just a minute. Okay. The relation to the equation Laticia showed us in the morning is this chi, as I said, the limit, is really the integral of another function. And this other function is always zero when t is bigger than s. And the reason for that, you just look at above there, if t is bigger than s, you're looking at the dependence between state at time s to Brownian motion in the future. But it's a derivative, so it's the increment of Brownian motion, cannot affect the past. So that's definitely easy. This is zero. This function is symmetric, just by definition, obvious also. I'm starting at one because I start on the sphere, I remind you, so this must be one. The beginning of the overlap must be Q because that was also my condition. And it's not so obvious, but the derivative of the response function is always one also. It's automatic. Now, what about these three functions? They will solve some integral differential equations, which will appear in the next slide and answer Gerard's question. The next slide is full of colors. So here is what happened. I am now doing, this equation exists for all L, but they are slightly more complicated because I'm not on the sphere. But if I also send L to infinity, they simplify somewhat. And so I'm writing the equations when L goes to infinity, which correspond to the equation that Tisha showed us in the morning, and also the equations that Lenka showed us if you reduce them. So the black equations are exactly the black terms alone are exactly the Kugliandolo-Kurchan equations, exactly the equations for which appeared in Laticia and derived in the middle of the 90s in various works by physicists. And in 2006, there is a paper that I, with Gerard and Alice Guionet, where we derived that if you start with Q equals zero, if you start uniformly, then the limit will be the black one. Right. And what is the added colors is because of the conditioning and the change in the initial conditions.
Okay.
I did not yet finish. Okay, so there is also this mysterious Lagrange multiplier, but the mysterious Lagrange multiplier is just determined by everything else. You remember that the function CSS has to be one. You might suspect that this means that the derivative should be one, but it's not true because it's a symmetric function, and this is a derivative in one direction, so you get the equation's identity that one. Once you put The derivative is written there. Once you plug t equal to s and you equate it to 1, you get an algebraic formula for mu, and that's a formula for the Lagrange multiplier. Next, what is V star? Jan's question. V star is an explicit formula involving nu prime. It's some function involving nu prime. It involves q star. It involves some 2x2 matrix of numbers that you need to invert, blah, blah, blah. What is important for us is one thing first. It's linear in the E star and G star. Means what? If you put G star equals 0 and E star equals 0, the V star will be 0. Why? Why is it? And the second thing, also important, is that V star involve only the nu prime. So V star at 0 will be 0 as a function. Okay? Now, nu prime at 0 is also 0. So if I start with Q of 0, which is equal to Q, equal to 0, what will happen? You look at this equation, you see that if you start at 0, all the terms involving Q will stay at 0. So you will just stay at 0 all the time. If you stay at 0, all the things with color will disappear, and you arrive to the original equation. So it's like sanity check that if I made an error, it's at least in specific direction that did not ruin this thing.
So the magnetic field will represent, then this will be violated.
Yeah, but in magnetic field, you will also have another, it's not this, but you will have another equation for magnetic field. And one of my students, 10 years ago for his PhD, derive the equation with magnetic fields. It's much simpler than happens here because it still affects stuff, but it's not in this way, but in a slightly different way. Lenka's equation also involve a breakup of the when you plant, you also involve a breakup of the radial symmetry, but again, it's done in a slightly, you don't have these, the blue terms, because you didn't condition, but also the effect with the other colors is slightly different because it's a different type of equation. But it's done, I think it can be proved in a similar manner.
The Q of S is equal to C of S and T equals 0.
No, the Q of S is equal to the overlap between the deterministic point around which you put your initial condition and your current state. No, and also remember that my Hamiltonian was also translated. So there are two, this is what I want to say, there are two effects here. The blue come from, and this comes here, the blue come from this conditioning. I made this change in the conditioning, and this gave rise to some changes in both in the covariance and in the formula for Q. This is coming from essentially changing the disorder. And you can see that if you make G star equals 0 and E star equals 0, although you condition the disorder, you condition it not too far from the typical value, and therefore you lose the blue terms. Now, the reason that you have the red term there is because you still conditioned on the gradient to be 0 in the orthogonal coordinate, and this means that you killed some of your randomness. And that reduces slightly what happened there. And
this red term is singular when you get Q star equals 0, right?
What?
This red term,
no, Q star is never 0. Q star is never 0, but Q 0 is actually large. If Q is 0, it's being on the sphere uniform. Yeah, a sphere of n dimension is singular to the sphere of n minus 1 dimension, but when you take all these limits, the whole thing will disappear, and I'm never on the sphere anyway because the variables are moving on the plane. So.
Q prime is the
Q, yes? Q prime is...
Q prime.
There is no Q prime. Q star, where is the prime?
The Q, yes.
Q.
It's quick and you didn't make it right.
Yeah. Well,
equation. For purple equation, you have a Q prime.
Ah, yes, Q prime is a derivative of Q with respect to time. It's just an integral differential equation. Okay, so this was essentially an exercise in modifying the derivation of the CK equations by introducing this conditioning and this uniform measure. Okay, but it's still not connected yet to anything. In order to connect it, yes. Yes.
Sigma is nothing special.
Sorry?
If you have...
Yeah, if you start with this equal to zero, it means that you believe that you did not change the Hamiltonian, but you did change the Hamiltonian because here, forget the radial coordinates, there are these n minus one coordinates of the gradient, you essentially tell me that sigma is a critical point. That's information that may matter. And this involves in n minus one derivative, so it's important. One derivative equal to zero, few variables left were moved there, right? So that's, this is staying and it's doing the red part. And it's breaking the symmetry because typically a particular point will not be a critical point. Okay, so now I want to go to disorder dependent initial conditions. What does that mean? So I'm now looking at my real Hamiltonian, no more large deviation conditioning. I'm looking at a typical Hamiltonian somebody gave me, and it may have critical points. So I'm saying, let me count the critical points on a particular sphere of radius Q star, which have value minus n e star, and radial derivative, which is what I wanted it to be. Okay, that specifically this set C and delta, which are all the points on this particular sphere, where the gradient, the spherical part of the gradient is zero, the radial part of the gradient, the part normal to the sphere, is approximately G times the norm of sigma, and the energy is approximately N. What does approximately mean? Delta will be small numbers that eventually, as N goes to infinity, will also go to zero. Now, it's possible that this set is empty, and it's possible that this set is not empty, okay? So here is a theorem. The theorem says if E star is positive and G star is sufficiently large, then if you start with this initial condition, now nothing is conditional, there is no conditioning. If you look at this ratio of two averages, you will go to zero. Now, what is the ratio of two averages? On the bottom appears the expected number of points of this type. On the top appears the sum of all initial points from this particular ensemble. And for each one of them, you calculate the probability, given the disorder is fixed, sigma, which is depending on disorder, also fixed, but the Brownian motion. So you do average over the Brownian motion or average over the Langevin. And you're asking yourself whether this Langevin made an error. This event, lambda n sigma bigger than epsilon, the event that you went not near the limiting function. Now, this always goes to zero, always. However, it may be useless. Why it may be useless? Because it's possible that this expectation may be large or positive, but it's related to some strange disorder which happened with extremely small probability. However, if I can remove the expectation, then I get a reasonable statement. Then I get the statement, start at one, a randomly chosen one of your points in this set, and then most of the time, with high probability, you will converge to this equation. So the equation I got before corresponds then to the correct situation. This, all of this thing is on time zero to t, and in the definition of this event says one of the three functions, random functions I wanted, was with distance at less than at least epsilon in one time between zero and t. So time is fixed. It's not, I want to take n. You can take time to infinity afterwards when you analyze the equation to get aging, but you first take n to infinity because if you take time growing exponentially with n, then you get to a different regime and the whole thing is different.
And you're going to tell us about that regime later?
Sorry?
You're going to tell us about that regime later?
No. Okay, what I want to say is that if I have the property that the size of this set is proportional, even if small, but proportional at least to its expected value with high probability, then I can remove the expectations from both sides and I get the more interesting statement, which says, take a random point from this collection uniformly, for most of them, you will converge to the previous equation. This makes the previous equation, which were derived by tilting Hamiltonian, to now relate to a typical Hamiltonian. What I need is conditions under which, if I choose the Q star and the Q the Q star and the E star and the G star correctly, I want to look at spherical spin. Now I'm looking at static or some other case. I just look, ask, can I find a situation where this is going to happen? Where the typically, this is now really a question about this probability has no, this probability has no Brownian motion nor Langevin dynamic. It's a probability under the Gibbs measure. I'm just looking at the, or not even under the Gibbs measure, just a probability under the disorder, essentially, under the Gaussian distribution. Okay, so this relates to work, series of work by Eliran Subag, and before that by Gerard and Offinger, and at the end of work by all three of them. And it says, it starts, the point I start is start the following. It says that if you take the pure spherical model with p greater or equal to 3, and you take large enough beta, then if you look at the Gibbs measure, this is exactly the spherical p-spin Gibbs measure, and you will look, if you look at it's the largest or k largest local maxima of xj of the Hamiltonian, those are of course critical points, then you will find that the Gibbs measure, most of the Gibbs measure is going to be supported on specific bands around this high maximal point, right? That's a point of being one RSB, that you have these clusters, but here we have a geometric meaning to the clusters. They are exactly going to be these bands. These are spherical bands of a very small width, and they have a radius square root of nq around this particular critical points. Okay? So if I choose my q to be comparable to this one, then I am actually, I'm not, the measure I said is not uniform, but this, my measure is on the same place where the support of the Gibbs measure. Sorry? Minimum. That's what happened when you change signs in the middle of, okay, whatever. Yeah, definitely minimum. Thank you. And these XIs are roughly orthogonal, and these bands are going to be typically disjoint. This is a case of the pure P-spin, and the picture in this work, sorry, it's with Ofer Zeytouni, not with Tuka, this work. Gerard, no, but I forgot. So in this work with of Gerard, Subag, and Zeytouni, informal version is that if you make a small perturbation of a pure case and you take beta large enough, you have essentially the same picture, but you need to modify the definition of the bands. And the center of the bands are now moving inside the square, hence my Q, inside the ball. Hence my Q star that was less than one. And you have the same story, and now the band is defined as by the inner product, should be comparable to the norm, but this is not really so concentrated because the Q is less than one. So this being compared to that is not really a point. You still have a room for the band. Thank you.
We have questions for Amir. There's one.
A bit stupid question, but you started with this parameter L, right? But which was confining more or less closer to
right.
The, yeah? But you only considered eventually limit L to infinity?
Right. You can derive the equations for L, but they will be just a bit uglier and less informative, and they will be corresponding instead of being on a sphere to be essentially on some kind of a band depending by L.
On a shell.
Yeah, a shell, but it's not more interesting and it's more difficult to analyze. So the way I view this L as a way not to differentiate Brownian motion on the sphere. So it, for us, it was a technical device.
Mm-hmm.
More.
So in the end, with this result about the Gibbs structure of pure or near pure, you can in the end say instead of conditioning the disorder to be
right,
such that sigma is a critical point and the energy is something, you can take at random one of the small one of the low critical points.
Right.
One of these bands.
The other slide, what they say is that this equation, which is marked by Dagger, actually does does happen, and that this is that what we did in terms of initial condition is comparable to the Gibbs measure, except not take the Gibbs measure on its support, but replace it by a uniform measure on one of the bands that we collect from the support.
Yeah, but in fact, when the temperature is really low, the measure on the band is very close to being, it's high temperature.
Except
on the band.
Yes, except here is a
it's
puzzle.
It's very close to uniform.
So here is a puzzle. If this would be the case, you would expect that if you start with the right parameters, the CK equations will stay with what you expect to be the answer, but they seem to be sometimes going out of the band. Macroscopically out of the band.
In the pure model.
Sorry?
In the pure model.
They go out of the band. And I think the reason is that yes, it's nearly high temperature, but there is still a lot of these things. And time is short, and you go to one of them, and it's sufficient to confuse you. And longer time, you will go back, surely, but the time might be too short for that.
Other remarks back there? Wait for the microphone, please.
So this dagger, based on the next couple of slides, you're saying it holds for any E star that's positive, or do you need E, because those later works are for very low temperatures, so do you need E star to be like a sufficiently large thing
The first result hold always. The second result requires you to find such points. For example, if you take E star to be too large, beyond the global maximum, definitely will find nothing.
But what if it's only a little negative, a little like epsilon?
So the statement is that if you put E star, a little is okay.
Does dagger hold? Because these geometry things are all for very low temperature, right?
Yeah. I think maybe a little not, but it doesn't need to be all the way to the local maximum. You essentially need to be able to do a second moment on this object, on the number of. If you can, then at least you can prove it. What I did not say is that what might be interesting is to do the analysis of these equations. Right, which is aging analysis and things like that, and see if it's any different than the usual ones without the extra breakup of symmetry. I think it's going to be very similar, but I did not try to do it.
Other remarks? If not, then let's thank Amir again.